the field, turns for home.
They're at the top of the stretch.
Top of the stretch.
They're into the stretch.
And here they come into the final furlong.
Final furlong.
Final furlong.
Into the final furlong.
They go inside the final furlong.
This is the final furlong on HRRN Live.
HRRN Live.
It's Trainer Talk Wednesday. Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Welcome back, everyone, and welcome to the final furlong show. It is indeed Trainer Talk Wednesday here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, and looking forward to a milestone show here today because we are going to have Ladies' Day on the final furlong show. For the very first time, we will have a female trainer join us, and we're going to do better than that. We're going to have two outstanding female trainers with us this afternoon over the course of the next hour. Kathy Walsh will be here at 6:30, but before we get to Kathy, Helen Pitts Blasey is with us in just a moment here, and looking forward to that. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, ready to roll with this Trainer Talk edition.
Yeah, this is a great show we have on tap. I can't wait to get to it.
And Helen is with us now, and a very busy day for her. She actually may have a co-host with her there, her two-year-old daughter, Olivia, by her side. Helen, thanks for taking the time.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Would you rather let Olivia do the talking? Or
She might have more to say if Olivia does the talking. Pretty chatty.
That's great.
Well, listen, we really appreciate you taking the time on a very busy afternoon, and looking forward to spending some time with you here. Let's start this show very much about you, your background, how you got involved with racing. You were born into a racing family, but it wasn't necessarily flat racing. It was steeplechase racing. Tell us about that.
Dad, mom always trained him and dad rode him. At the time he was also a steward, but I was just kind of brought up in the world of fox hunting and steeplechasing. And, dad always swore he'd never let me come to the flat track just to work. But, he let me come to the races when I was little, but he swore he'd never let me work at the track. Much to his despise, here I am.
And of course this was in Maryland, if I'm not mistaken, right? You grew up in Maryland?
Yeah, yep.
Okay.
Yep. My mom still has the same farm there, and it's kind of, I grew up riding pony races when I was 7, 8 years old. I think I won my first junior race, a horse race, when I was 13, at Fair Hill, actually. But on a horse of my dad's that we'd gotten off the track, and he'd made a jumper, but he was about 12 years old and packed me around there.
So what was that conversation like with your dad when you finally decided to take it to the flat racing side of things?
Well, I don't know. He probably couldn't say a whole lot, but it was, he kind of was like, well, you sure there isn't anybody else? I worked for Charlie Sumwick at the time with the jumpers, and it was, I think I was home from college for the summer, and he just didn't have a lot of horses and stuff, and I was wanting to go work for Franny Campitelli at the track, and he didn't really know what to say. He couldn't stop me, but at the same time, he tried to discourage it. But, It all worked out, I suppose.
Well, us racetrack dads, we don't like to have our kids working on the track. We know.
No, he didn't. I was allowed to go to Preakness and stuff and go to the races, but I know he didn't want me to work on the backside. But
well, it's
anyway,
a tough life. So, it's a very tough life, and it's especially tough for women sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But I can't say I have not enjoyed it. I mean, it's turned out for the best, and I always say things happen for a reason. I mean, don't think I don't miss the steeplechase horses in ways, but, what will be, will be.
Do you still keep up with steeplechase racing, Helen?
Oh, absolutely. Actually, mom goes all the time at home, and when I do get home, I try and go, whether it's on a weekend or try and go when I do get to see some jumping races. I know, absolutely, I do. I talk to Jack Fisher and those guys quite a bit, and Sean Clancy, who I see quite a bit, is still involved with it. So I still keep involved.
Yeah,
so.
We see Clancy way too much.
Well, I'm always trying to find good horses to make jumpers, but
it's a great community, the steeplechasing community, and it seems like all of you guys really look after one another and are always happy to see one another. I know hanging around Sean, You know, he's always saying nice things about people that, that he's come in contact with through the steeplechase business, Rosie Napravnik and
like
you.
And,
yeah, yeah. So it's that's really cool. That's the way, you know, flat racing used to be that way back in the day. It's kind of gotten away from that now. It's a little bit more cutthroat.
Yeah.
But it's nice to see that the steeplechase people get along so well.
Well, and it's very centralized between, say, Maryland, Virginia, and Pennsylvania is where the majority of everybody lives. I mean, you have the few that, you know, are a bit further out and about. But, you know, I mean, Sean rode races for my mom. I mean, they're, you know, he'd been doing it forever. And you know, it is a very close-knit group, and everybody kind of looks after one another. But it's kind of a smaller world. It's not so quite as broad as the flat racing. But it's a neat little world in itself, you know.
Well, Helen, take us through your time when you finally come to the racetrack. You started working, as you mentioned, for Francis Capitelli. You also worked with Kenny McPeak for quite a while, had a lot of success there together. Talk about that and how that has influenced your career and where you are now.
It's been great. I mean, I went to work for Franny at the track, and, you know, this is a whole different ballgame. I mean, I was used to galloping out in wide open fields on, you know, steeplechase horses head to tail, and kind of a different ballgame. And I come to the track, and I'll just never forget the day Franny put me on the toughest horse in the barn, and I swore I couldn't hold her. And needless to say, I learned my lesson. I think I went about 3 miles. But, it taught me to be strong quick. But Franny was phenomenal. I worked for him for 6 years. And a couple winners, we had horses for George Strawbridge and stuff, and he just got down horses and didn't go to Florida in the winter. And by the time I'd gotten out of college, I found that Florida was pretty nice as opposed to a winter at Pimlico. but I opted to kind of go without him, and that's why I ended up hooking up with Kenny. And he got me to come to Kentucky. I swore I'd never leave Maryland, but he brought me to Kentucky and gave me a phenomenal opportunity. It was, I mean, I worked for Kenny for 6 years, and it was great. We had some very, very nice horses, and he taught me a lot, and where I am today because of him.
And you were there in the early days of Horse of the Year Curlin, too, weren't you?
Yeah, I actually had Curlin. That was after Kenny retired.
Yeah.
You know, we had Repent, Take Charge Lady, Harlan's Holiday.
Yep.
And all those horses, you know, and then the first year Kenny, he had bought Curlin as a yearling, and then when he came in to me as a 2-year-old the following year. So it was quite a time. It was a lot of fun.
What do you remember about him when he first came into the barn?
I was a big overgrown baby. He wasn't a bully. He was just a big baby. But, you know, that we just took our time with him, and he was a very neat horse to be around. I think kind of the older he got when he moved on to Asmussen, the more aggressive I guess you'd say he got. But he was a great horse to be around. He was, you know, we just took our time with him. And when he did finally, the light bulb came on, and we were down at Gulfstream Breeze in like December. What would that have been? 06, right before he went on to break his maiden that February. And he just kind of like, you know, started breezing more, and the light bulb just came on. And he ran that February, and he was pretty special, very special.
What's that like, having a horse of that caliber and then finding out that he's been sold and he's moving on? Explain that to people, how you feel about that.
Talk about the highest highs and the lowest lows, right?
Yeah, it was hard. I mean, that night he won. I mean, it was already not a done deal that night, but it was in the works. I mean, it was already... The fact of the matter was he was going to be sold. And it was a matter of who it was going to be. But just the hard part was is spending the time with him. We just, you know, he fought shins, and he bucked shins, and then we turned him out for a while, and we brought him back. And you're always kind of just, you know, I felt like I was an idol with him for a while. And he was, the hard part was the fact that just taking all that time, and then I got him, you know, you enjoyed it for one race, and he was gone 3 days later. That was the hard part. You know, it'd been one thing if I'd had him for a month or two and he got sold and was gone. You never really got to know him, and, you know, he was just a horse. But, I mean, he was just, you know, he'd been with me for almost a year and was just, you know, he was a neat horse to be around. And we'd babied him for so long and brought him along, and then to have it, you know, be gone. And, you know, it was a great opportunity for me, and he put my name on the map. But, you know, would it have been nice to have been around a horse like him for his career? Absolutely.
Yeah, it's got
at least I have silly shoes.
It's got to be. It's got to make you feel good though that he did so well after you spent all that time. There's nothing worse. I don't think as a former trainer of spending a lot of time with a horse and getting him right, and then having somebody claim him off you or switch barns or whatever, and see him go downhill. I mean, it's got to give you.
Absolutely. I mean, for him to go on and do what he did, maybe I'm wrong, but in my heart, it kind of showed that the time paid off and allowed him to be the horse he was cut out to be.
I don't think there's any question about that. I think, you know, hats off to you for seeing something in him and taking the time with him that he needed to get him 100% right. And I mean, everything that he did in that 3-year-old year, I mean, you got to attribute it to you, really, because he went right from breaking his maiden basically to the Kentucky Derby. So, you know, it's a pretty good, pretty cool feat, actually.
No, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, he just, like I said, it was just funny seeing him from the time he came in as a baby to kind of like when the light bulb came out in December and he was starting to breathe. And I just felt sorry for the horse. I kept breathing with him because he was a beating. But he hung tough as hard as he could, but he was no girling. But, it was hard for everybody involved. But it was great. It certainly was great to see him go on and to be that horse. So,
Helen, I'm curious about your
part of his career.
Yeah, I'm curious about your mindset in the early days. You know, you're around a horse like Curlin, who you know is very, very special from the beginning, and then you end up going out on your own. I think it was July 1st of 2005, if I'm not mistaken. 3 days later at Churchill Downs, you pick up your first win as a trainer. And are you thinking, wow, this is an easy game?
Yeah, I think it was actually that day. It was a filly called Cacatores on July 1st.
Oh, okay.
I want to say it was the first one I ran. I want to say, I could be wrong, but I remember the filly very clearly. But it was. It was like, well, this is this easy. Why isn't everybody doing it? Why didn't I do it a while ago? But, to those that know, it's not. I mean, it's the most up and down game you can ever be a part of, but it's if you can take the uphill with the downhill and take it all in stride, it's when you're having a rough go, you always know that hopefully there's light at the end of the tunnel somewhere because it can only get better.
And of course, we started the conversation by talking about your daughter Olivia, who is by your side literally right now as we speak. How did that change your life and your career as a trainer, and how have you dealt with that with having a young baby at home? You mentioned she's only 2 years old. How'd you deal with that?
It's hard. I mean, I feel like part of it, you know, she takes me away from the game, but part of the game takes me away from her, but you just kind of got to make it work. I mean, for the first, while we brought her, she came with us and I had a nanny at the track and she's a big part of it. I mean, you know, she's either at the races or running around the barn. You just kind of got to balance it out. And it's hard, but you got to learn how to enjoy both. And all my owners have been great family's a big part of a life as well as a career. So somehow you gotta make them both make equal terms.
Speaking of family, your husband, Greg, not just somebody who doesn't know anything about horse racing, he's involved in the game as well. Talk about him and what he's meant through this entire process.
He's been a big supporter. He knows he's trained at 1.2 and realized how hard the game was and probably took the smart road and got out. he's the outrider at Churchill and he's a big supporter. I mean, and that's why I think it works, because between the two of us, whether he's got her or if I've got her, babysitters fall in line too, but you make it work. He's got a very, he's at the track all day during the meet. So it's hard, but he's been a great supporter of the ups and downs of my career. And before we did have Olivia, the traveling when I was going over with Einstein I suppose it makes you stronger.
Well, it is great to have somebody that you're with that understands the game. I mean, I think it's a huge asset, because the racing lifestyle is just that. It's a lifestyle. And if you're with somebody that doesn't understand the hours and the day and how everything works and the ups and downs that you have to go through every day just to be in the horse business, it can make things difficult. Laz Barrera always told me that having kids really helped you as a trainer. And I found that was true. He said that when you have a kid, you don't know what they want when they're babies. You have to figure it out. And it's the same way with the horses. And I found that to be true.
It's a great comparison. It really is. Cause you got to be able to, try, like you said, absolutely just try and understand them. And that sometimes it's hard and sometimes it's not so hard, but it's just a matter of kind of getting in their heads and trying to figure out what it is they're needing.
Talking with trainer Helen Pitts Blasey here on Trainer Talk on the Final Furlong Show on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Helen, it took us 14 minutes in this interview to bring up the name Einstein and talking about your kids.
I thought you'd forgotten about it.
I'll never forget
him. My life, and you forgot about him.
Well, I had to ask you about Greg first, so
he'll appreciate that. He will really appreciate it.
You can tell him he got top billing over Einstein. Talk about Einstein. Talking about your children. These horses sometimes do become like your children. I know that he meant an awful lot to you. Tell us about that relationship and what he's meant to your career.
I don't know that anybody will understand my relationship with Einstein. It was one of a kind. You want to talk about? I mean, just absolutely almost like my best friend. I mean, I'd pull up to the barns in the afternoon and he'd get to screaming and hollering, and it was hard to shut him up half the time, but you almost feel love. but he was a big part of my life. I mean, he kind of filled the void of Curlin after he left. And, I've just never been around a horse with as much heart and love for the game and just loved his job as much as he did. Loved life. I mean, didn't matter who was, eating, training, running, it didn't matter. He was always had a smile on his face and absolutely loved it.
What's your favorite?
He's a very special animal.
What's your favorite Einstein moment?
Oh, gosh. Probably the Santa Anita Handicap.
Yeah.
Probably one of my, the Woodford Reserve was phenomenal. He ran in it 4 years in a row. And I don't know that any horse has done that, let alone very few. I know a couple have won it twice like he has. He ran in it 4 years in a row, but the Santa Anita Handicap was a big moment. I was the first woman to ever, I believe, win it as a trainer. And he just, to be able to go out to California like that and win a big race like that, he just, it was special for him to be able to do that for me. But we had a lot of good moments, but as a racing perspective of the races, winning the Woodford twice on Derby Day was phenomenal, but the Santa Anita Handicap, just in the prestige and to be able to go out to California and do that as a woman gave me a great moment.
That's one of America's great races, the Santa Anita Handicap. But I'll tell you, I'll give you my Einstein moment. I had to do a handicapping seminar on Oaks Night for the people from Regions Bank. And I had the CEO or CFO or somebody from Chick-fil-A in there. And the guy stands up and asks me a question. He said, if I took all of my retirement money and had to bet it on one horse tomorrow, who would it be? And talk about putting me on the spot. And I said, I just went with the horse I knew was going to fire. I said, I'd bet it all on Einstein. And the horse.
Well, I hope he did. He's a rich man if he did.
I hope he did too. But I found out later from the man that ran the party that I was doing the handicapping thing at, that the guy made a sizable wager and he was really, really happy. And so I got hired for 3 more years to do the seminar.
Oh, that's great.
But I've always loved Einstein. He was a Brazilian horse and I used to train a lot of Brazilian horses. So I took a liking to him right away, and he was just the coolest horse, and I enjoyed him a lot.
I've never been around one so smart. I mean, that was the smartest horse that I want to say I've ever been around. I mean, besides personality and just, loving the game, he was brilliant. He was absolutely brilliant. He knew when I moved my office chair in the office with the door shut, he knew what I was doing. I mean, it was 10:30, and if I hadn't started feeding lunch yet, he would start screaming. I mean, it was like, hello, it's 10:30, it's my lunchtime, you've forgotten me, you know. I mean, he knew, you know, what was going on. He'd let me know if I'd forgotten something. But he was a very special animal. So he is deeply missed. His groom still works for me and his hot walker, and you don't know, we talk about him every day. But he was a great traveling companion.
Well, Helen, we know you have to get going here in just a minute, but you mentioned how special it was being the first female ever to win that race. And if I'm not mistaken, you won the QE2 Challenge Cup at Keeneland, and it marked the first ever grade one win by a female trainer in Keeneland racecourse history. What's it been like for you being a female in a sport that is predominantly dominated by men, especially on the training side? What's that been like for you, and how rewarding is it when you can get to the top like that in some of those big races?
It's huge. I think it's great for the game. It's a great feeling. I always kind of, you know, because it is male dominant, you always kind of feel like, I don't say the underdog, but you know, I kind of tiptoe around, and when a moment like that happens, it's a great feeling. I mean, you know, to be able to be in the likes of Todd and you know, run against Kenny and whoever else it might be, you know, McLaughlin, and just to be, you know, on the same playing field as them and to be able to do well it's a great feeling. I think it's great for the game just to say something to help us win the belt. But it's a lot of fun. It makes it fun.
All right, Helen, we won't keep you. I told you it would be about 20 minutes. I think it's been 21, so we'll let you go spend some time with Olivia and with Greg.
I made it home, so the child has been distracted. I will no longer let her voice her opinion.
She was very, very good. And, look, we really appreciate you being here, as always. It's always fun to talk with you and catch up with you, and great stuff. We could spend another half an hour talking with you, but we appreciate it, and
absolutely,
all the best. We're going to look forward to seeing you at Churchill. Are you going to be at Gulfstream later this year?
No, I'm actually going to Oaklawn.
Okay.
Yep. So we'll be participating in Arkansas this winter. So I may be down there, though. You never know.
All right.
So. We'll be keeping tabs on you. All the best. Good luck. And we'll look forward to talking with you again here soon.
Thank you very much, you guys. I really appreciate it.
All right. Say hi to Greg.
I will. Thank you.
Thanks. Trainer Helen Pitts Blasey, our special guest. A lot of fun, huh?
Yeah, it's a great story. Interesting life.
I really wish I could have asked her about what that relationship is like with Kenny now. You know, because now they're competing against each other. I know that he probably cheers for her, obviously, being a former assistant, and I'm sure that she cheers for him. But I wonder what that rivalry is like and that camaraderie when they have horses in the same races together.
Yeah, it's probably good.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's,
you know,
fun.
Kenny's out there. You know, and she's, you know, she obviously has an affection for Kenny. She said he taught her a lot. And so, you know, I used to be like that with Julio. We'd run against one another. I'll tell you a great story about that. My first win during the regular Santa Anita meeting was with a filly named Sam Dells Lark. And Julio ran a filly in the race named Pregunta.
Okay.
And Julio used to use Shoemaker a lot, but I got Shoemaker for my filly. That's a whole different story. And Julio's filly was ridden by a bug boy, Tim Malgarini.
Okay.
And Pregunta was a little skinny filly, didn't have much to her. And I had all new equipment because I was a new trainer, and Julio's bridles and stuff were kind of old. So he came up and he said, could I borrow one of your bridles for the race today? And I said, sure, we were stable next to one another. So I gave him this new bridle, and he used it on his filly, and my filly won the race, and Julio's finished second. And after the race, he brings the bridle back to my barn, and he didn't even bother to soap it up or anything, just put it in the office, right? And then he starts yelling at me, that bridle was too heavy. That's why my filly didn't beat yours. He said, I said, I've heard a lot of excuses, but a heavy bridle.
The bridle was overweight.
Yeah. I said, well, why don't you use one of those threadbare ones that you got over there? And you use my jockey too. He said, Oh my God! I took all the pages out of his book,
right?
And I beat him. You'd think he would be at least halfway happy. I'm sure he had the exacta, but you know, that's Julio.
More characters and character involved on the backside of racetracks, and you'll find you could. I mean, there have been novels written about the backside of racetracks, but when you get back there in the barn area and start talking with some of the characters, you'll meet more characters and have more fun.
Yeah, the truth is stranger than fiction. Yeah. I mean, you can't even believe some of the stuff, you know, that goes on in the conversations. And I mean, I could go on forever. And some of it's only suitable for Howard Stern. So.
Well, trainer Kathy Walsh, somebody who I know you are close with, she is out on the West Coast now. She's going to join us in just a couple of minutes for the second half of this all-ladies edition of Trainer Talk here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Looking forward to talking with her about all of her accomplishments. Again, a half an hour, probably not going to be enough time because she has had such an illustrious career, and we'll look forward to catching up with her in just a few minutes, so stay tuned for that. We do want to remind you that you can call into the show tomorrow night, our final furlong call-in show, 6 to 7 Eastern Time. It's all about you, the listener, every single Thursday here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, Sirius 93, XM 209. Visit hrrnlive.com for more information. That's hrrnlive.com. And, of course, be sure to check out horseracingradio.net for podcasts of all of our shows, blogs, whatever it may be, our schedule. It'll be there as well. Horseracingradio.net.
We're going to need bigger pocket schedules.
We are.
We're going to need like a map.
And we finally condensed it down to a pocket schedule. Yeah. Now what are we going to do?
Well, the print is going to be so tiny, nobody will be able to read it.
All right, Kathy Walsh coming up here on the second half of this ladies edition of Trainer Talk here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Stay tuned here on HRRN.
Imagine having 80 channels of live, full card, uninterrupted simulcast feeds delivered direct to your home television for just $50 a month. Choose from your favorite thoroughbred, harness, quarter horse, and greyhound tracks in North America and internationally. Call Dish Network at 1-888-677-5487 and ask for RTN, the Racetrack Television Network. RTN is the only place where you can see every race from every simulcast every day.
RacehorseReport.com.
What is it?
What is it?
What is it?
What is it, baby?
International racing, weekend stakes recaps, always free selections, great stories, workout information, racing news, handicapping tips, spot plays, and more.
It's as marvelous and as simple as that.
Join thousands of other thoroughbred racing fans by going to RacehorseReport.com. Make RacehorseReport.com your number one source for thoroughbred racing information.
That's great.
RacehorseReport.com.
The $1 million Delta Downs Jackpot, Saturday, November 17th. Delta Downs Racetrack Casino and Hotel in Vinton, Louisiana is running 11 exciting thoroughbred races worth over $2 million in purses. First post time is 1:15 p.m. Central. The jackpot goes off at 4:15 p.m. Bet with the big money and play the $100,000 guaranteed jackpot day, all stakes pick four. Last year's pick four paid more than $6,000 for a $2 bet. You could really hit the jackpot. For all the action on November 17th, watch it live on DRF.com, DRF Bets, or at a simulcast location near you. For more information about this $1 million Delta Downs jackpot, keep reading Daily Racing Form or visit DRF.com and DeltaDownsJackpot.com.
Don't miss your chance to participate in the biggest handicapping event of the year, the Daily Racing Form NTRA National Handicapping Championship, presented by Sovereign Stable and Treasure Island Las Vegas. To be eligible, simply log on to nhctour.com and register for just $50. Compete in handicapping tournaments throughout the country and win your seat at the NHC to be held January 13, 2013, Treasure Island in Las Vegas, where one lucky player will win an estimated $1 million and an Eclipse Award as Handicapper of the Year. Visit nhctour.com to see a complete tournament schedule and register today.
Want to know what we're up to?
Yeah.
Then log on to horseracingradio.net.
It appears that the website has become alive.
Horseracingradio.net is your official home for HRRN on the web. Read our blogs, download our podcasts, link up to our Twitter and Facebook pages, listen to live streaming of all of our broadcasts, and much more. HRRN is your home for racing's biggest events, and our home on the web is horseracingradio.net. That's horseracingradio.net.
It's Trainer Talk Wednesday on the Final Furlong on HRRN Live.
Welcome back to this Trainer Talk edition of the Final Furlong Show here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, our producer Lee Delapina in our Lexington, Kentucky studios here on HRRN, and ready for the second half of this ladies edition of Trainer Talk. A great visit with Helen Pitts Blasey in the first half hour, and really looking forward to our next special guest. And JT, I'm going to let you do the honors here with our special guest.
Well, there's really not enough nice things to say about Kathy Walsh. I've always felt that she was the top woman trainer in the United States for many, many years. She has several nicknames, which I know she doesn't like, so I'm going to gloss over those and just say that I've been looking forward to having her on the show since we started this, really.
Well, Kathy, welcome to the program. Happy to have you with us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network tonight.
Oh, it's nice to talk to you guys. I'm Jude. How are you? Long time no see.
Yeah, I'm good. I saw you at Breeders' Cup, but you were busy running around, and I was on the air. I didn't get a chance to talk to you, which was too bad. But, you know, I follow you. I pay attention to what's going on out there, and it's great that you're still doing well, and you've just been such a class act your whole career.
Well, thank you. That's very complimentary. We had a great Breeders' Cup, and I think everybody enjoyed it. The weather was fantastic, and God, the racing was sensational. Huh? What did you guys think of it?
Oh yeah, it was great. We had a blast. It's always so nice to go back to Santa Anita and see everybody, and I get such a warm welcome when I'm there. It's always pretty touching to, you know, see people and have them say, you know, oh, we miss you and all that. It's really, really nice. And of course, the event itself is spectacular. The horses were outstanding. You know, the track was in great shape. And so it's just a pleasure to have the Breeders' Cup at Santa Anita.
Yeah, it was fun. The weather was great this year, too. Tell me something about your show now. I've heard a lot about it, and a lot of very, very complimentary things about it, really. Well, you guys are doing a great job trying to get racing out into the public.
Yeah, we've been working pretty hard the last 5-6 years on this show and getting the big stakes races out. We basically do two segments of the show per year. We do the Road to the Triple Crown, and then after that's over, we start the Road to the Breeders' Cup. So we go all over the country broadcasting the races, and then lately here, since Sirius has joined the club, we're on Sirius on Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays, and that's how this Trainer Talk show began. And we've had some of the great trainers, Shug McGahee's been a guest, and Dale Romans, and a whole cross section of people, but we've never had any women. And I kept telling Mike, we've got to get Kathy Walsh on there. She's the number one woman trainer in the United States for many, many years. So here you are.
Well, here we are. Well, it's a pleasure to be on the show, and where can we start?
Well, let's start from the beginning, Kathy. That's always a great place to start. You were, like so many other trainers, kind of born into the game. Tell us about that.
Well, it really basically was, my father was just a small owner, and then he had some health issues, so he started training on his own. The rest of us kind of ran the farm, and then I was the one that kind of went with him, Mike, and started out at a very young age, and he was very, very close to Buster Millerick, who was a wonderful friend. In fact, he gave him his first broodmare when many, many years before that, and we kind of just we mostly stayed in California in those years. And my dad kind of had a little bit of gypsy in him in his own way of thinking. And we traveled to Oregon and Canada. And so at a young age, I started with him and met a lot of great people. And then when his health got bad, I just kind of moved into the position of taking over the stable. And we purchased a farm in eastern Washington in 1961 and started a breeding farm there. And then he started a public stable. Before that, we were just our own horses. But in those days, it was a little different. But women started moving along, and racing became basically Seattle area was, it had been a wonderful place to race and had a lovely, lovely racetrack and a lot of really dedicated people breeding just a few limited amount of horses, but they became very popular. I mean, the horse and breeds became very popular and their sales started picking up and it kind of moved in. Washington, Oregon and California all became one. And when you had better horses, you made the California winter circuit. So it became kind of a program to go summertime Seattle and winter times in California. And after I took over the stable, we kind of upgraded the horses and the clients became, you know, more into wanting to race in Southern California. So that's how we kind of moved along. And then I proceeded to kind of travel around the country. And basically, I give all the credit really to all the people. You know, it was really kind of more, versus today, it was more families in those days, you know, and everybody, I think Jude can tell you back, everybody kind of became each other's family too. So it was a little easier maybe, I think, at times to break in then if you had started at a young age. And it's a lot tougher now than it was then. But racing is good. Racing is still real great. We just need to kind of pick it up and give it a little better boost than we're getting right at the moment.
Well, and Kathy, you mentioned something a moment ago when you said that things were different back then when you first started out, and you said women started moving along. Talk about some of those challenges that you face being a female in a male-dominated profession, and especially there in the early days as you were getting started. Talk about some of those challenges.
Well, it was a little challenging at times, but I was fortunate enough, like I said, I had a very good, and Dude can tell you, Buster was a very prominent man in those days, and it was very, very close to him. And I had a little bit of an edge, Mike, in the sense that I started at a young age and was, you know, grew up kind of with it. They had a lot of little silly rules, like women couldn't saddle their own horses and all that. And I didn't even know that. I came to Santa Anita one time and saddled a horse, and the steward was Mr. Murphy. He came over and proceeded to tell me that I wasn't supposed to have done that because you did a good job. So that was the end of that. And yes, it was more challenging. It's easier in some areas now. The only thing I think basically in those years there wasn't really, I'm not saying that there was people against it letting women come in, but it was a little challenging. But it was like anything else. I mean, if you were good, you were able to get there. And also, I think maybe more forgiving than maybe sometimes now is that someone starting out fresh and young and going, I think they got a little more help. And then now it's very, very competitive, as we all know right at the moment. It's very competitive. But I think when you prove that, you know, you had the knowledge and you could do it. I was leading trainer a number of years in Seattle and all, and I really basically say that it was a good start. I think traveling around the United States, I raced in New York, Florida, and Midwest a lot, and started in, actually was there in the open track in Minnesota. And we had, I think really basically by then, in the later years, it's more understanding. I think it's a little easier for women now than it was at that time. But in saying that, I mean, I think it's still tough now too. But I mean, if you work hard at it and I really believe that the bias has changed, you know, not as much as it should, but it's really progressed a good long way than what it was before. And I think it's tough. What I think right now in our business, truthfully, is it's getting tougher and tougher for anyone to get started because it's hard to get a stable of horses going, and the cost factor is tough, and racing is incredibly, you know, competitive, as you know. And basically, we don't have the number of horses we used to have. So it is tougher. You know, I look at a lot of young guys now and gals and think, boy, they got a rough future in front of them, you know. But it'll weed out, and the good ones will survive, and the others won't. So that's just kind of the way of life, too, you know.
Well, it is so hard to get clients now, and the clients that you do get, a lot of them jump ship with regularity. if you're not winning, you know, they find somebody else that's winning that week, and they've got the horse. You know, it's a big struggle.
That is true, Jude. But you know the our problem with our business ourselves, I think we're a little bit just too careless in ourselves. We gave away a lot of our business too, and I think that, you know, when we talk about attendance and, you know, and getting live action back on the racetrack, you can't give something away and then think you're going to get it back again. You know, we were very careless. We did not stay on top. I really believed racing in general, we didn't stay on top of, you know, all this internet gambling and all this stuff. We should have got a bigger cut of the pie, and we should have been much more careful and much more select. And I think you and I both were here in California when they were going to the, you know, the simulcasting bill, and they started out, they were going to have a 65-mile-plus radius, and that would have been a much better rule to put into effect, because it's still on-track attendance, which is really the fun thing. I mean, we have to, if our game is going to survive, we have to make it entertaining and fun. And it is. I mean, you saw 2 days at the Breeders' Cup. I know we can't have those every day of the year, but we can still have, you know, back to where people feel really a fun thing to take their family and go out and go to racing. And I think both the business aspect of it, I think it's both the front side has let down quite a lot in their contribution to making people want to come to racing. I mean, they've lost a little. And then our own, you know, we have to have nice full fields. You know, we have to have a real good competitive game. I mean, it's, if you play the game on a top level, you'll get attendance. It's just that we're dropping ourselves off by something. Maybe we have too much racing. I mean, that's a big question. But I really think to get our game back is we have to start with the young people. I mean, you can't start with somebody. I mean, they learn how to play video games at 10, 11 years old, or 9, 10 years old. We need to keep them back learning how to go to the races, you know, and we don't do that anymore. And everything is built on the youth and on, you know, that's what you look down the road for. And we're not doing that. We're not getting the young people that are racing. And I'm not sure that, I sure as heck don't know the answer. I don't know if anybody does have an answer. But really, racing is a wonderful, wonderful sport. And when people get into it, yes, it's expensive, but remember, it's just like having it's the only chance you can have your own sports franchise. I mean, you can have stable horses, can be a franchise. You can't buy the Yankees or the Dodgers or whatever have you. And that's what people need to think. It needs to be that sort of, you know, real feeling. And we've lost a little bit of it. I think we're working at getting it back. And I think shows like yours, I think the shows that HRTV and stuff that's on TV is great. We lost a lot of years in between, and I have people now. I was out in the desert this past weekend, and I had people come up to me, and we were talking, and they said, "Oh God, you know, we watch the races now on TV." Well, we didn't have that for years, you know. And
that's we used to have 25,000 people on a Wednesday at Santa Anita.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, and nowadays it's we all understand that yes, it's not a real. It's not a real expensive sport, but it can be. But still, you have to, if we would have started 30, 40, 50 years ago, really building our young generation up into it, but we didn't do that. We kind of let that generation go. And I can remember Mr. Godstein, who owned Long Acres Racetrack, and he always said, you know, we have to have those bodies out there. That's what really counts. And we got to make sure that they come out here and have fun. And I think that's where, as you said, 25,000 on a Wednesday with nothing at Santa Anita, 60,000 on a big day at Santa Anita, you know? So we need those things, but we just, I think possibly, you know, more exposure like you're doing right now on the radio shows, TV shows, you know, you put enough out there and people are going to get a little interest in it. And I really think that that's where we need to go. I mean, because it's such a great game, but it's hard. I mean, I bring people to the track and it's very difficult for them to understand, you know, how to gamble and what's going on and everything. So if people like myself and you and all, we know what we're doing. We need to spend more time and teach them to do that too. And that's what I think they need to do more of. It's very expensive. It's very hard for racetracks to do it nowadays when they don't have the attendance. But they're not going to get the attendance if they don't go out and get their youth coming to the racing.
Talking with trainer Kathy Walsh here on Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Kathy, you're the first female to win a training title. You mentioned starting out at a very young age, working with your dad. Which person or people has had the biggest influence on your career?
Well, I was fortunate enough to have a lot of people that, naturally, my father was a very good horseman, and I learned a lot from him at a very young age. You know, we rode horses and what have you and all, and we started from the ground up. But also because of starting young and having the connection, Buster Millwreck probably, I think, my dad used to have me spend a lot of time with him just because we had cheap horses, you know, just a small stable, one or two, five, you know, at the most. And different, you know, not the kind of quality horses. And I spent a lot of time with Buster. And as Jude will tell you, he was a unique person. He was very different, very tough, but very, very knowledgeable. And, you know, you learn a little bit from everybody. I mean, you know, I always was taught, and I still say this to guys I start out now and working for me, is, you know, you can learn in you can learn from anybody. I mean, a hot walker in your shed rail can teach you something that you didn't know, no matter how long you've been around. And Buster taught me that at a very young age. And I think basically because of my involvement, and I met a lot of wonderful people along the way, I was very close to Lou Elkin, who was racing secretary for years and years out here in the West Coast. Mr. Kilroy was somebody that you idolize, as Jude will tell you, and you learned a lot about it. Joe Godstein, who basically, when my father died and I took over a huge stable of horses, and it was kind of a competitive type thing situation at the time, and he was very helpful to me. He was always a very near, dear friend, and he owned Long Acres Racetrack. It was his special place. And throughout the years, I've been very fortunate to have a lot of good people just stand behind me.
Buster, he was such a great horseman. I was happy to see him get into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Finally, we worked kind of hard on that, trying to get him in there, and richly deserved, because he was a trainer's trainer. He used to help everybody on the racetrack. Even guys like Bobby Frankel would go to him for advice. And so I was really, really happy to see that. I'll tell you one thing about you is that you're a great teacher. And I had an assistant, Scott Sasha, that used to work for you, and he used to remind me on a daily basis, well, Kathy would do it this way, Kathy would do it that way. And I thought that was great. I mean, he obviously learned a lot from you, and a lot of trainers nowadays don't take the time to teach people. You know, they're so busy running the business because it's so intense that they don't have a lot of time to teach people. But you obviously took the time to explain the reasons that you did what you did, and it carried on.
It was fun. It was always good. Because I was taught that way. I mean, I had a lot of people working and going out of their way to help me, and I've always wanted to do that. And I think now that's a little bit of our problem, because parts of our game right now makes you be too much of a business person instead of just, you know, the hands-on that you are. And I don't do that. And you know, if you feel yourself that you lose a little touch with that too, you know, I mean, that's one of the things that you give up a little bit. But look at the job, and basically look at the job a guy like Wayne Lucas did. I mean, say what you want, any way, shape, or form. Look at the young people that he's had with him. I mean, good God, Fletcher, McLaughlin, all of them, you know, right down the road. And great, great horsemen on their own rights. But I'm sure that they'll all tell you that it started, you know, Wayne went out of, Wayne had a way, and he did. You were there when he was in big time here in California, and he had a lot of people, young people working for him. But I mean, he taught a lot of young people. He was good about it too. And I think sometimes, really basically now, that a little bit of that is lost. And you made the point very well. It's because you're running the business. It's very difficult to do it too. But no, I was very fortunate with a lot of great people. You don't ever accomplish everything on your own. You have an awful lot of help to get what you get. You're very fortunate to go that. You're going to move up, but it's because someone helped you climb up.
Kathy, you've had so much success, obviously, throughout your career. You've won multiple training titles. You've won countless greatest stakes. You've been to the Kentucky Derby. When you have a quiet moment and you sit back and you look back on what you've accomplished, which moments stand out to you and are most special?
It's really strange. I can't really say that. I wouldn't want to try to pick one particular point. I think one of my biggest things is I bought a young horse years and years ago in Spokane, Washington, and it was my dad's first major stakes winner later on for him. And Buster, in fact, I brought him down with Buster to Hollywood Park, and he got beat in the Futurity, but he won a major race. And that was a real standout. And a lot of things come back to you. Individually, training titles are, they're great at the moment, and believe me, don't get me wrong, I'm not putting it down or anything, but I think that you got to kind of reflect on, I've had a lot of lovely horses and great people. I trained horses, and Jude probably remembers, I trained horses for a gentleman by the name of Pasky DiDomenico, who was just a nightmare, and we were at war 24/7, and we had a great relationship. Funny with the Bryce Aroney man, he got him big in the business before he passed away. Now his son, Dr. Mark DiDomenico, as you know, owned the great mare here a couple of years ago, and he's very wonderful young man. He's doing great for us in racing and helping us out a lot. He's serving on the board of our TOC. He's very, very generous with his time and his work. And you remember people like that, and then you remember people that had just one or two horses with you that meant a lot to you, too. So, I mean, you don't reflect back. I don't reflect back on one particular race, because that's just a one-race thing. You think back about your whole career, and it's been a great run. It's been a fabulous run. It's been fun, and you look forward to going out there every day, every morning now, you're looking for that big one around the turn, It might be coming next year. Who knows? And that's, I think that's what young people have to realize, is that they don't want to get caught up in thinking that, God, it's going to be overnight and I'm going to be this overnight success, because it wouldn't be any good anyway. It's a hell of a run along the way, and it's really enjoyable with some of the stuff you pick up on. So give it time,
Yeah, the journey's very enjoyable, and that's one of the lifestyle, the racetrack lifestyle, and the people that you meet. I mean, it's amazing. You can be standing next to Sheikh Mohammed at the Keeneland sale one minute, and the next minute you're at the groom at the barn with a groom from Mexico, and you're talking about tomorrow's fourth race, and it's just it's a wide cross section of people, and there's a mutual respect that everybody has for one another, whether it is a prince or it is a groom or a hot walker, that's what makes racing so great, I think.
And I think, like I said earlier, I mean, there's not a person that doesn't get into it. There are very few that I could say that they really think about that big horse they're going to have, and that's, to me, that's their little sports franchise. I mean, you're not going to, like I said earlier, you can't buy one of the big teams or whatever, but you can sure as hell, if you get that big horse, look how you look in the winner's circle, And that, I said years ago, I was given speaking at a seminar, and they asked me to encourage these people to get in the business, and that was the first thing I said to them. I said, you're sitting here in the Yacht Club in Tacoma, but if you're at Long Acres Racetrack and you're down in the winner's circle, you got 10,000 people looking at you. That's your moment. And where else can you go and have 10,000 people looking at you on a Saturday or a Sunday? We don't market our program as good as we should. And I'm not surely trying to say that I know how to market something better than the people that are doing it, but I really think that we kind of have not pushed the fact that it's a great, great, enjoyable place to meet people, to enjoy things, and it's just not about gambling. Gambling becomes a very small part of it. It's that competitive thing. By God, I can beat you, Phil, and he thinks the same, Phil, and he thinks the same thing. He can beat me, and I mean, you know, and we might be having coffee together every Monday, but we'll try like hell to beat each other that afternoon, you know?
That's right. So, that's right. You know. Well, you'll be happy to hear this. Because of our radio show, there was a man that was driving around North Carolina on his way home from work, and he was listening to us for, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 days, and he got the racing bug, and he didn't know anything about horse racing until he started listening to this show. And then he called in on our call-in show on Thursdays and asked us how he could get in the game.
Well, isn't that great? Well, see, we should have been doing this for years and years. I mean, that's what you guys are doing a great thing now, and that's what we got to get more of it. This is super. That's fabulous. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that made me feel really good that somebody, we actually, introduced him to the sport of horse racing, yeah, and we were entertaining enough that he thought it was worth pursuing.
Great. Now he just has to come out and get ready to go.
Yeah, he actually went down to Camden and went and watched some horses train. I sent him some phone numbers of people to talk to, he's going to get in the game. So.
Isn't that great? I met some, when they opened up racing in Canterbury Downs in Minnesota, I still have some wonderful relationships and friends from back there. And in fact, one of them was out and had a horse in the Breeders' Cup, part of a horse in the Breeders' Cup this year, and he stayed in the business back there. And I mean, there was a lot of people. They had a great, great time. And they never would have stayed, you know, if it wasn't for racing coming there, they wouldn't have got exposed to it. But, you know, that's what we need to do in racing, though. We need to get more shows like this and more people to be, you know, touch more people.
I knew I was going to like you for a guest. I knew I'd like having you on the show, Kathy.
Okay.
Kathy, about 3 minutes left here or so before we have to wrap things up. Hard to believe it's flown by, and really enjoyed you being here with us. You mentioned earlier it's very hard for you to pinpoint one moment in your career that really stands out. But how about in terms of the horses? Are there one or two horses that really stick out to you and you say, man, I'll never forget this particular horse?
Well, this one of the first horses I ever owned, my dad trained, was just a cheap claiming mare, but I learned, her name was Early Choice, and I learned more from that horse. And really, through Buster, she had a knee problem. We used to, you remember your first horse sometimes like that? I had another lovely horse for Pasky Domenico called Augusti, and he was just he won a number of stakes up in the Pacific Northwest, and was really basically a hard trying horse. Another horse I had was a horse called Whoa Boy that I bought from Alan Jurgens, and Alan Jurgens and I years later on talked about it. And if we both would have knew about the stomach ulcers in those days, I think he won like 8 races for me, and 7 of them were handicaps in the Bay Area, and he was a very nice horse. Those kind of things you remember back, and Alan and I had a conversation a number of years back when I was in New York one time, and I said, geez, we would have knew about Gastrogard in those days or stomach ulcers. I mean, he might have won a Sanita handicap. Who knows? And those kind of things you remember. In fact, the last horse, not a lovely horse I had here recently, was for a wonderful man by George Swore. He was a little horse called Georgie Boy, and he came from a $3,200 mare and a $4,000 stud fee and made close to $900,000 and won a grade one fraternity in Del Mar. But I think basically, Mike, to answer your question, a lot of horses you remember, but it's been a great run. I've loved it, and we're looking for that new best horse next year.
Well, Kathy, it's been an absolute delight to visit with you here on Trainer Talk. We really appreciate you taking the time and want to wish you all the best as you continue on with a stellar career. Thank you very much.
Good talking to you. Good talking to you too, Jude, okay?
All right. Thanks, Kathy. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Great stuff, trainer Kathy Walsh. Really, really enjoyable. We enjoyed our visit in the first half with Helen Pitts Blasey as well. If you missed any portion of this, a podcast will be available on our website tomorrow, horseracingradio.net. Make sure you visit the site, check it out, and listen again. Really, really enjoyable.
The First Lady of American Racing, I can say it now that she's off the air.
She doesn't like that.
She doesn't like. I used to be her publicist at one time, and I wrote an article called The First Lady of American Racing, and she got really mad at me.
Yeah. All right. Well, we are back tomorrow, 3 to 7 Eastern Time with HRRN Live. Visit HRNLive.com for more information. And again, check out HorseRacingRadio.net for a podcast of all of our shows. It's at HorseRacingRadio.net. Listener call in Thursday. So get ready to dial tomorrow, 6 to 7 Eastern Time, as we take your phone calls on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Been a lot of fun. For Lee Della Pina, our producer, Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you tomorrow on HRRN.
Good night, Barbados.